as he has said on the air here a few days ago, has taken a lead in expanding the business district within the city, which I think was smart and a recognition on his part that was something relatively simple that could be done to make a substantial improvement in the way business is handled here, so that his getting around will give him an experience base, and then we'll have, you know, we're both as a consequence of his being mayor and my being head of the council, but also of serving on as Victor Mandolia does here on the board of the Hudson Development Corporation. We have a number of tools to, you know, and opportunities to help improve the tax base, the job opportunities, the quality of life, and the opportunity for people to live and work here, which is one of the things we should be after.
I'll just remind people, if you're just joining us, this is At Issue. We're on WGXE 90.7 FM. We're broadcasting from the Hudson studio. And my guest today is Don Moore, who is the Common Council President in the city of Hudson. I'm Victor Mandolia. So last year last term was your first term as council president, and there were some contentious issues, obviously, as there always are. But looking back, like, what are you most proud of on as far as things that got accomplished last time?
Well, I have to say that I think that the LWRP was the high watermark in terms of having probably the most contentious issue in most people's lifetimes here. Excuse me, I'm proud of the fact that we got to a point where we can move on to the next steps of developing the waterfront. I trust that it's not seen as simply a win or a loss situation. I don't see it that way. I see it as something that I think many people believe is good for the city. And implies, as I've said any number of times, a great deal of work ahead. The work is far from finished, but I think that is the signal accomplishment of the term. I think also the fact that the city and the council were as helpful as they were in establishing the Hudson Development Corporation transforming the Washington Hose into a real gateway to the waterfront and the home of the Chamber of Commerce and of the Hudson Development Corporation.
And for people who don't know what Washington Hose is, that's the former firehouse at the very base of Warren Street at 1 North Front Street. Basically, it was right at the steps of Promenade Hill.
Right, and nestled in the Hudson Terraces, the combination of those elements, I think, is symbolic of the Hudson that we want going forward, which is diverse and integrated, and knows how to take advantage of an opportunity. You know, that firehouse could have fallen down in a few years if we had allowed it to, and it is over two and a half centuries old, and it would have been a big mistake if we had let it go. And we didn't, and I think that's a major accomplishment. In government, there's always it's more likely that you're going to stop something from happening than that you will actually start something, that you will actually make something positive happen. And I think those two are good examples of that. I'm delighted that the council and the mayor and even the supervisors were willing to weigh in on that and be helpful.
And it's also something. It's a good example of sometimes waiting a little bit and seeing what the right reuse of something is a smart idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what Victor's referring to, diplomatically, is that a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, there was a big fight as to whether or not the Washington Hose would be turned over for another use as a small convenience and fast food store. There was a there was a good deal of contention on the council at the time. I was not on the council then, and can take no credit one way or the other for that. But the council did fight that one through and decide that that it should be kept on the market, should be kept within the city's ownership, and not given over to another function. And I think that was a difficult but a wise decision on the part of the council, because to have the it always makes me smile, frankly, to have to know that the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce has its headquarters and will for a 12-year period at least, according to the lease, at the foot of Warren Street, makes a tremendous statement about the progress and the future possibility for the city.
And if you haven't seen the renovation of Washington Hose, it's really worth just stopping in and taking a look at it. There are all kinds of tourism brochures and information about the county that's open to the public. And if you haven't seen the renovation, it's worth a stop in. Just stop in and take a look at what's been done. And it's really a fantastic renovation. It's everything is extremely well done. It's in good taste. It highlights the bones and structure of the building, and it's really worth seeing a well done project. I think, yeah. You know,
it's a good point too. Just to reiterate, I mean, the point that Victor makes. Because and they want you to come in,
right?
You know, it is that in part it is a visitor center. It's in when the chamber set established their home there, they made that particular initiative. It was going to be a visitor center.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM. And we're back. I remind our listeners, I'm here with Don Moore, who's the Common Council President in the City of Hudson. We're discussing the previous term and the upcoming term and what's going on development-wise in the city and other stuff like that. Yeah. So there is a lot of buzz going on about different economic development and potential new businesses that are coming into the town. There's a brand new renovation, like a $1.2 million renovation for a new restaurant up on the 700 block. There was recently an announcement that Premium Brands is taking over the old former Hudson Fabric building, right, which was the Button Factory as well. That's down by the old garbage dump. It's on North Second Street.
We call it the county land.
Okay. it's the Teletubbies hills on North Second Street, which is a sight to see if you've never been over there. What can you tell us about a lot of this buzz? There's also been talk about, there was a rumor posted recently about the Riverloft buildings down there.
Well, building. You're absolutely right about, of course, as has been announced about the Hudson Fabrics and Premium Brands, and they're talking about 25 to 100 employees, and that building is certainly large enough to accommodate that ambition. There is the restaurant up on Warren. The Ackerman's building, the former Packard dealership at the corner of 8th and Warren, has been recently sold and will be turned into a grocer of some sort, more like a farmer's market, sort of a permanent 5 or 6 day farmer's market would be what some of us, I think, are more accustomed to. I mean, that's particularly welcome news. And as far as the waterfront is concerned, there has been some talk about the possibility of the sale by the Hudson Development Corporation, which owns it, of what's called a River Lofts building, which is a building that stands at the corner of Dock Street and Front Street. I'm not in a position at this point to confirm something that's in the middle of a negotiation, but indeed, I can say that the Hudson Development Corporation is actively pursuing the sale of that particular property, and the other thing I can say about it is that the Hudson Development Corporation and its board, as I've earlier said, Victor Mendelius sits on it, as does the mayor, as does the majority leader, Carmen Pirro, as does Orrin Stewart, the alderman from the fourth ward, Stephen Anderson, who's the CFO from Columbia Memorial Hospital, and the president, Seth Rapport, who is an attorney and has a long term business here. The point of
along with Lori Selden,
Lori Selden,
Mexican
I'm
Radio.
Sorry, thank you very much, thank you, Lori Selden, one of the co-owners of Mexican Radio. The point here is that this is a very serious group of people about their public role. When we were examining selling this property, what I can say is that we were not simply looking for a quick sale and a quick buck to put in the pocket of the city. We wanted to both sell it, but also have keep in mind that we have a public responsibility to have someone come in there and develop that property in a way that would be sustaining for that particular neighborhood and as a building block in the waterfront. And that's the way I look at the development of the waterfront from both the North Bay all the way through the South Bay. The North Bay is just is the area that Victor was just mentioning that's primarily bounded by the now county landfill. The county landfill is an area that the Columbia Land Conservancy has made a particular point for development into a park. They're very smart park developers and conservationists, and their plan is something that will be a tremendous addition down there. Then you move a little further south, and you have the River Lofts building, which is, actively under consideration for development.
Just for people to get a better fix on what we're talking about, the River Loft building it used to be a pair of buildings that one of them was knocked down, I guess, about 2 years ago, 3 years
right.
ago. And it's at the base of State Street and Front Street. It's for people who
front of dock,
right next to the water treatment plant and the
sewage treatment plant.
And
then moving down into the heart of the park, in the heart of the waterfront, what the LWRP taught me about land use, which has become a modest fascination of mine, although I was not very well versed in it a few years ago, but I've spent a good deal of time over the last few years becoming acquainted with it. Is that there are key parcels that the city can look to develop. There are key activities that can happen. One of them, as I said, is to repair to replace the Ferry Street Bridge. I hope both the driving and the walking part. I would really love to see restored the old pedestrian walkway that's beside the driveway. Then there is the 3-acre parcel on the waterfront between the railroad tracks, Ferry Street Bridge, what's called Water Street, which runs along the waterfront park, and the Broad Street crossing, where the Dunn's warehouse is. That piece of property is a prime piece of property for the city to find a developer. Again, it's not just to throw it into the hands of anyone who wants to develop it, but we want what we're actively considering. And this involves the mayor and involves our grant writers, is to create a land use plan, a master plan for that piece of property, and then the outlines of one, and then issue an RFP for a developer to develop that piece of property.
RFP is a request for proposal.
Thank you. Sorry, I really shouldn't fall into that. I hate falling into that trap.
I watched. Don't worry. We try not to talk over our listeners here at that issue because you can get wrapped up into being very geeky, wonky, and referring to everything as a acronym. And we try to make sure that we're explaining what we're talking about.
And it's a standard to which I'm pleased to be held. There's the South Bay, which can be developed as a park. I'm convinced there is some need to screen off the port. There is a need to complete the LWRP, and we're in negotiation with Holcim to actually have a land transfer that was part of the LWRP. There is the CAS building. And I hope if you have a map in your head, forgive me. The CAS building is a 70,000 square foot building that lies directly east of the railroad station, behind Stageworks off Cross Street. Again, HDC owns this piece of property, and it's a prime piece of property, I think, particularly for resident. My dream for it is residential development, possibly a hotel and residential development, because we certainly do need more housing. As more people over the next decade decide that they too want to come join us here in Hudson because of the quality of life and the particular character of our business and our culture and diversity, and so there are significant challenges, but there are real opportunities in developing that our waterfront into another extension of the Hudson community, and that's one of the things I think we are continuing to work on, and that's one of the principal outcomes, I think, of the LWRP, is to give us an opportunity to move forward on those development projects.
Let's see, in today's paper we have discussion about another toxic remediation that will be. Upcoming for the I know that the land surrounding the Dunn's warehouse has already been remediated in 2008, I think.
In 2004,
but now there is coal tar, which was the byproduct of the gasification plant that the Dunn's warehouse actually was. And the Dunn's warehouse, for people who don't know what that is, it's the abandoned factory that is in the center of the waterfront park, basically toward the south end. What do you feel about that remediation, and how will it jibe with the activity that goes on down there?
I'm hopeful. I do think that there is inherent worth in having DEC and National Grid clean out the coal tar that they have discovered right in front of the principal boat dock for the city, and that there's no reason to assume that they won't proceed. They should, but they need to proceed with a few things in mind. One of them is that we do have a very active park, Waterfront Park, Henry Hudson Waterfront Park, now at least 3 or 4 months of the year, mainly in the summer. That we are actively considering development and bringing in developers to make site visits, to look at the to see the land and the project that that DEC has in mind necessarily involves dredging equipment. It involves barges to carry dredged material. It involves onshore processing plants to dry out either naturally or mechanically the dredged material, and then trucks to transport the dredged material off the, away from the waterfront to whatever sites they have to further remediate the soil. And we just want to make sure that that they to use the mayor's expression in the paper this morning, that we have a seat at the table, and sooner rather than later, so that we can be reassured that they will take into consideration our plans as well as their plans. And I think they will. I think that one of the points that was made by the representatives from DEC and the Department of Health last night at the public meeting that was held at the Hudson Area Library, is that they have done many of these projects on waterways, dredging in the past. They have done them in front of active waterfronts, and I think that once they also bring that information, that experience to the discussions with the city, we'll probably see that indeed, you know, that they are particularly careful, that they will take us into consideration. But you know, we are a small city, and we have learned a long while ago to be vigilant in defense of our own interests. And I think those instincts serve us well in a situation like this. So it's an ongoing discussion and a good one.
And it sounds like the work would be done probably in the time between October and February, is it?
That's
so,
right.
And that's to not interrupt with the reproduction of fish and that kind of thing. So yeah. It seems like in general it will not be affecting outdoor festivals and things like that. Maybe at the tail beginning of the work, but
you know, that's I would love to be able to just simply say yes, of course. But whenever, you know, having spent just enough time involved with government projects, and I have to say, you know, whenever I make these criticisms, I have to follow up by saying I resemble that remark. the problem with this is that yes, they're almost certain they can do this in 4 months from October to January, maybe. But then what happens if it has to stretch over into a second work period, and that is the following year from October to December? What's the impact on the area where they're working? Do they remove all the equipment and come back next year, or are we going to just have large processing facilities left on the waterfront that, you know, puts an entire year on hold? That's my baseline concern with mm-hmm. this. I'm sure they're going to do a good job. It's just, you know, it's with, I mean, as we found when we put in the docks, you run into, you know, you're dealing with land underwater, mm-hmm. and you don't know what's in there, you know, or what complications you're going to run into.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's all understandable. It's just that I want to be sure that they're taking that into consideration, mm-hmm. as does everyone who was there. I mean, you know, and I wish they had told us in advance, you know, that they were doing this. It was sort of, you know, they're well intentioned, but we heard too much about their listserv problems and their new initiatives, and too little about why the city government had to learn about this from the Register Star, however good the job the Register Star did in reporting it. That's life in the little city.
Mm-hmm. So there's been a big shift on the county level with Hudson's relationship to the county, and I was wondering if you might have any thoughts about that. Just a little background for people. When after the election this year, the Hudson's supervisors became all five Democrats after having a split of 3-2 in the Hudson Supervisors. Hudson, as opposed to all of the towns in the county, where the supervisor of the town represents the their town on the county level. In Hudson, there are five supervisors, from one from each ward, that represent Hudson's interests on the county level. So that's a big shift and a big change. And the former chair of the board, Roy Brown, was unseated by Pat Grattan, who is the Kinderhook town supervisor. And there's been a big shift as far as the relationship with that Hudson had with the county. Often people considered Hudson to be the bad stepchild of the county and not necessarily a part of the discussions. And a lot of that has seemed to change. What are your thoughts about it? How's your relationship going with the county on the county level?
Well, I think at this point, excuse me, it's a little early to tell. I think all the signs are good. Pat Grattan is someone who is known to be much more congenial to Hudson than many other supervisors, and that's a good thing. We have five people now who represent Hudson as our supervisors, all of whom have had extensive experience. Excuse me, I had to kill. All of whom who have had extensive experience with the city, a mayor, Rick Sclair was mayor, Bill Hughes, Sarah Sterling, Alan Thurston have all been aldermen. Ed Cross has been a supervisor for a good long while, so that there's a much better experience base. I think the question with all of us, I wouldn't apply this just to the supervisors. I'd also apply it to the common council and the mayor. There's a great sense of goodwill. And I think a willingness to sort of examine the city's interests more closely. And the question for all of us is then at some point, what do we think we can get done for the city? And I think that it's a little too early to determine that, because everybody's really sort of getting firmly grounded in their new positions. Mm-hmm. But I think all the signs are good right now. I don't see, clearly no one is throwing rocks at us. And we're not throwing rocks back at them at this point. So I think that's healthy. And I don't really think there's any intention to. I really do feel that Hudson will benefit if we wisely work together with the county. And of course, Bill Hallenbeck, the mayor, is also a former supervisor. So that in terms of being able to pick up the phone and talk to people, which is always one of the best signs of in government. Can I pick up the phone and call Rick Scalera? Can he call me? Can I call Ellen? Can Bill Hallenbeck call Pat Grattan? And the answer is yes. For example, we have this issue of the 2010 census and the weighted vote, and whether or not the county and the city will work together on that. We haven't in the past. We're not sure that it's practical for us to do so now, but we're talking to see whether or not we should be working these issues together, and getting them done more expeditiously for both of us in the process. And any major or minor efficiencies that we can work together, so much the better. So I think it is hopeful for us as a city looking forward this next couple of years. And I think that also another good sign, and your listeners may be aware of this from other from previous interviews, is that Pat Grattan allowed all of the supervisors from Hudson to choose any committees
well,
to
the whole
serve
county,
on
all
that
the,
they
the
wanted
county,
to.
The whole county, actually.
Yeah.
All the Democrats in the entire county were allowed to have any committee that they asked for, which is a huge shift. I mean, normally the Democrats were just dropped into the committees that they didn't want them, that they didn't want to have.
the Democratic supervisors outside of the city of Hudson will forgive me for my parochialism, but that's not a great expansion in the number of people that that were covered.
I'm not going there. I'm not touching that.
So what else is before us? I mean, I think that we're going to talk about a new, you know, we have to have in the next 2 years we have to have a new police and courts building facility. It does look as if the until the document is signed and the ink is dry, I don't want to suggest a final decision on the part of the Board of Supervisors, but it does appear that the Railroad Avenue building will be retained as the home of the DSS, which means that will not
the Department of Social Services.
Oh, come on. yes, the Department of Social Services, and will not be available as a new home for the Hudson Police Department and the Hudson City Court. But you know, we had a good discussion yesterday with the Office of Courts Administration, and Judge Cerecia came down specifically to meet with us, and he was very congenial and understanding about the fact that we really did try to. We thought we had it last year. We had a real possibility to finally get out from underneath the consent decree that has been with us for at least a decade in terms of moving the courts to a place that meets requirements as well as, I mean, the Hudson City Court is just woefully inadequate. And if anyone has spent any time there, they would understand, as is the police department. I mean, that is, you know, sandwiching in about as many functions as you possibly could into a space that small. So anyway, that's something that we will definitely need to address these next 2 years. And I think there's goodwill to get that done.
So if you're just joining us, this is Victor Mandolia. This is At Issue on WGXE. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And my guest today is Don Moore, the Common Council President in the City of Hudson. We're discussing the previous term and the upcoming term and stuff to watch on the city level and the county level in Hudson and Columbia County.
There's one thing a couple of things I want to say here. We've got plenty of time, but I did want to mention before I forgot it that the city of Hudson makes available to its low-income senior citizens a STAR exemption. But that STAR exemption needs to be applied for by March 1st of every year. And I have to say, to his credit, Victor Mandolia brought this up to me. I did not think of this myself, that we should organize ourselves and the relevant aldermen to call these seniors and some nonprofit organizations and make sure that they had filed the appropriate paperwork by March 1st. And I just want to take the opportunity now in the event that anyone is listening who might have had or be eligible for a low-income or disabled STAR exemption, that please contact the City Hall and pick up one of the forms and get it into the sole assessor's office by the end of the day, tomorrow, Thursday, March 1st. You don't need to fill it all out. Just sign it and get it there so that at least you don't feel troubled by the amount of information on it. Second thing I wanted to mention,
and the assessor will help you fill it out if you need a hand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The assessor will do that. That's the point. Just get it in signed with your address, and he'll help you fill out the rest.
There is no way to change it if you miss the deadline. The deadline is the absolute deadline. So it's very important that if you're eligible for these discounts in your property tax, that you get it in.
Yeah, right. Now the other thing I wanted to mention is that. Has to do with volunteerism. I think that this city runs on people who are willing to stand up and volunteer for substantial positions. It goes everywhere. You know, people who know me have heard me talk about the fire department and how much I respect the level of volunteerism that occurs there. The city would be in big trouble. our insurance rates would be much different, housing insurance rates, if indeed these men and women weren't willing to step up, take training, be available, carry pagers so that they have to run at a moment's notice. They do from wherever they are. But there's also commissioners. There are also boards. The planning commission, the board of assessment review, the zoning board of appeals, the historic preservation commission. They're not all positions aren't all vacant on those, but they're definitely places where some hard work needs to be done on a regular basis. And indeed, if you have any interest in being helpful in that regard, if you feel you have any desire to learn more about land use planning, and would be willing to serve on the Board of Assessment, the Zoning Board of Appeals, or the Planning Commission, or if you're would be willing to help out at grievance time with the Board of Assessment review, the bar, please get in touch with either the mayor or myself. These are really the mayor's responsibilities, and I'm not trying to interfere with them. I'm simply trying to help promote the notion that the government functions best when the most people step up and are willing to put time in and learn these positions and carry them out effectively for the benefit of the entire community.
Particularly if you're qualified and you have certain skills that are necessary on these boards, it's stepping up and identifying yourself as having these skills is always a huge help and can put your knowledge and wisdom and history to use for the entire community. So that's a great thing to step forward. You also get to understand how the government works a little bit better, which is very cool, especially for political geeks, wonks, or, you know.
And when you work with it, you own it. You know, it's part of you. It's like voting. I mean, you know, voting is one way to say that this is your government, and actually stepping up and doing something in between the times when you vote is another way. And which leads me to another subject, and that is the senior center. It's complicated and somewhat and mildly controversial, and that's not really what I wanted to talk about right now in this regard. What I'm most interested in is, once there is a senior center, and I believe there will be, and I believe it will be a good one, then what will we do with it, and who will help shape it? And again, this has to do with people stepping up from the community. I think the 15 or 16% of Hudson's 6,000, roughly 800 citizens are over 65, and I would like to see more of them, come forward and form an advisory group so that we really do have a sense of in a year or so, whenever we not just break ground but cut the ribbon to open the senior center, that we really will have the beginnings of a program and a structure that will serve the seniors in our city. And I think that and this is not, again, it's calling on people to say what they would like. I'm particularly fond of the concept of aging in place, which is to say that senior services support through a center the ability for people to remain in their own homes. And I think that would be particularly of service in a community like ours, where many, many seniors do own their own homes and do want to remain in them. And I think that's an area of service in which the city could be supportive. I wanted to mention that in terms of the senior center. I think just the functional aspects when is it going to come before the city council be, the common council be completed with it? I think that will probably be April, possibly early May. Just for those of you who have who were looking for some information about that deadline.
Do you want to show your hand and say how you're going to vote on the larger or the smaller version, or no?
Oh, I'm going to vote for the larger version. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. No, I don't. I don't. I think that the arguments, both for its function and what is what Victor's referring to, is that there are two possibilities. One is a one-floor addition to the youth center, and the other is a one-and-a-half-floor addition to the youth center. The one-and-a-half-floor addition would also have an elevator, which would serve not only the second floor of the new addition, which is, as I say, a half floor, but it would also serve the second floor of the existing youth center, and I think makes it a much more multi-use facility. And I think that in a city of our size, my considered judgment is that having the senior center and the youth center together is not only good simply for an intergenerational communication and work, but I think it also makes it administratively much easier to carry out effective programs for both the young people and our seniors. And I think that the financing end of it is such that we can do it relative, in my view, relatively inexpensively, and have a building and a center that's more than twice as valuable for a cost that is only about 25% more for the city than was originally proposed.
I'll just remind everybody that we have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/@issue spelled out. And there I post upcoming guests and post archives of previous shows. It's a great place to just go back and hear other shows, and particularly if it's something of interest to you personally. So please join the page. It's facebook.com/@issue. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Well, not every Wednesday, but most Wednesdays. I wanted to thank Tom Rowe and Sarah Kendall for helping me in the last 2 weeks. I've been off for the last 2 weeks dealing with some medical stuff, and I appreciate very much them helping out and filling this slot with programming. We have about 10 minutes left, so is there anything in particular that you want to bring forward to the people that are listening?
Well, I think there are a couple that we could mention. I think that one of the responsibilities that the council has, as I said, is to create new opportunities to look for at least, as if we don't create them, at least assist them to happen. And then I think there's always a need to keep a weather eye out for issues that might have not a positive, but conceivably an impact on the city that would be less than desirable. And I think that's not something we've done a great deal of, but I think it's appropriate for us. And I think that one of those areas is I would like to know more about is the rail to truck facility out in Claverick, Greenport, and the trains running through the city, and what impact that will or won't have on life and commerce in the city.
That project was received a large amount of funding from the governor's new economic development regional councils recently. So,
$2.2 million. For a terminal to transship from truck to rail and then rail to truck, using the spur that comes through down from Greenport and the ADM railhead, as it's called, down through the city and to connect with the main CSX line along the river.
That's the line that runs through 7th Street Park, for people who are, you know, familiar with what we're talking about.
Right. And I think that there's a certain amount of vigilance that needs to be applied, and I think we need to do that, because I think that if nothing else, communication, as we saw with the DEC project, can sometimes fail, and misconceptions can begin to run amok if you're not careful, and we want to try to avoid that as much as possible, because the last thing the city needs is more bad information running around. I mean, one of the things we love about this city is the fact that is that there's sort of nothing ever escapes anyone's notice. But we just want to make sure that it, you know, what we see is accurate. I think that's one of the functions that we have before us. I'm pleased that the terms of just the internal workings of the council. I think that I'm very pleased that. That we have strong, we have stronger committees this year. We have a stronger finance committee. We have a stronger legal committee, and I'm trusting that we will do more with the economic development committee. In that regard, I was listening to the mayor's interview here last Friday, and his young interviewer, who was about as articulate an interviewer as you'd want, and I gather was about 13. I don't remember his name. Popped a question to the mayor. Why don't we have webcasts of the common council meetings? And I thought to myself, well, you know, we've talked about around the edges about some of this thing, but you know, he's absolutely right. We should have webcasts of the council meetings. So let's see what we can do to get that done. And that's the sort of. You know, sometimes when issues are right in front of you, you can't see them, and then someone else brings them to you, and I think that's one that caught the. You know, I cannot tell you how pleased I am that Dan and Mary Udell are doing the video casts and putting them on cable television. I think that has. That was controversial 2 or 3 years ago, and now it is an accepted practice, and people stop on the street and say that they've actually been watching them.
And in fact, I understand that the Udells have also been they arranged for the Udells to also broadcast, record and broadcast the county meetings as well, and that's fantastic. They do. Yeah. A tremendous job. They're, you know, a couple that live in Taconic. They drive here each time that there's a full council meeting. They record each one. They transfer them to DVD themselves. They send them into MH Cable, and they have done a tremendous job for, you know, open meetings and should be really applauded. I know last year the Hudson Democrats honored them for their work for doing it, and they really provide such a huge community service and really should be commended. When Don talking about volunteerism, this is true dedicated volunteerism. Because they believe in Hudson, they believe in open meetings and transparency really fantastic couple.
Right. And they don't live in Hudson.
Exactly.
Let's see.
I had a question for you and I completely lost it. Well, you know what? We'll take another break and we'll come right back. This is At Issue. I'm here with Don Moore, the Common Council President in the City of Hudson. Be right back on At Issue.
I'm going to nail Nick about this.
And we're back. I'm Victor Mandolia. This is At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM and WGXE.org. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And I appreciate all the listeners and comments that come in and people. You know, when you're recording a broadcast or putting out a broadcast live, you never know who's out there listening. But you know, people come up to me and tell me that they've listened and that they appreciated a particular show, and it's really great to hear. So, you know, definitely feel free to get in contact. My email address is victormen@gmail.com. If you just want to if you have a question or you'd like to hear a discussion about something, I'm completely open to trying to put things like that together. So definitely be in touch with me if you'd like, victormen@gmail.com. On next week's show, we're going to be discussing the Galvin Initiative, the nonprofit arm of Eric Galloway and Henry Van Merrigan. I think I have that right. That's the organization that Tom Swope is the executive director of, and former Mayor Scalera is a consultant for. They have purchased recently many historic properties in the city of Hudson, and we'll be having a discussion about the organization and about a lot of the properties. And so I hope you'll tune in next week. Again, that's next Wednesday at 10 o'clock. So what do you see as like a major...
How do we finish this broadcast up? Well, I'll tell you, there's one thing that I think is a true game changer for Hudson, and that is removing the state truck route from the city. Particularly now with the focus on Upper Warren Street and the development as a business area of Upper Warren Street. There is no reason why that truck route, as far as I'm concerned, has to be in the city. It could run around the city just as easily, and I am given to believe that there are people in the State Department of Transportation that share that opinion, and that's I think another one of the initiatives that we really need to pursue over the next year. Because there's so many people in the business community, as well as people who simply live along the truck route, who have to put up with the noise, with the jake braking. We outlawed the jake braking, but if you're not on top of them all the time, you know, they're using their air brakes to stop these 10-wheelers. And also we've heard from truck drivers that, you know, that they don't like to have to come through, you know, winding through the city the way they do.
Right.
And so anyway, I think that's another one that would make a huge difference in how the city regards itself.
Yesterday I was walking on Worth Avenue up by the entrance to the prison, and every truck that came by was jake braking. That's a spot where, because it's particularly, it comes in at such an angle, you know, it's quite steep incline or decline there, really.
Right.
The people up there must be furious. So right. Like it's so loud,
and there's still, you know, I've walked on Front Street too. I mean, even the aggregate trucks coming down are still using their jake brakes.
Right.
We do need to talk to the police department about that.
So we're out of time. Coming up is Al Jazeera English. Al Jazeera English can be heard here every weekday at 11 o'clock and always following my show. I want to thank Don Moore for joining me this morning.
I appreciate the invitation.
And again, tune in next week when we're going to be discussing the Galvin Initiatives. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
New Yorkers seeking to make energy-efficient upgrades to their homes can now obtain low-cost financing and repay the loan on their monthly utility bill. The program, known as On-Bill Recovery Financing, allows costs incurred by homeowners to be offset through energy savings while reducing consumption and air pollution. On-Bill Recovery Financing enables qualifying homeowners to make their homes more energy-efficient with no cash upfront. Some improvements may also qualify for other incentives or rebates offered by New York State or your local utilities. For more information, contact the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority at 1-866-697-3732.
You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Athens, Germantown, Chatham, Cooksackie, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
This is Al Jazeera English, broadcast exclusively on Pacifica Radio.
An overnight attack in northern Syria. Residents call it a massacre. Hello from Doha, everyone. I'm Kamal Santa Maria. This is the world news from Al Jazeera. Three Egyptian judges have quit the trial of pro-democracy activists unexpectedly. Two wins for Mitt Romney, but the race for the Republican presidential nomination remains as uncertain as ever. And ready, set, Google, the internet giant about to use your private information to make more money, but it's not too late to opt out.